Brett, sometimes I dream of becoming an actor. Have you ever dreamt of becoming an actor? Maureen, what is it you think I do for a living? Never mind, sounds like you need the New York Film Academy. NYFA offers workshops, BFA and MFA degrees and summer camps in filmmaking, acting, journalism and more, online and on campuses across the globe. To make films alongside industry professionals, explore more at nyfa.edu. Thanks, Brett. Thank you, Maureen.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase, every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
Maureen, your Canva presentation looks brilliant. Thanks, Brett. That's because I used AI-powered Canva presentations. I just described what I wanted, and Canva presentations generated the perfect slides. You can even make a talking presentation for people to watch on their own time. Check this out. Recording. 101 Reasons Why Beaches is the Saddest Film Ever Made by your neighbour Maureen. Is it easy to use? If you can use a computer, you can nail your next work presentation with Canva Presentations at canva.com, designed for work. Oh, thanks, my neighbour Maureen. Yeah, thank you.
Look out, it's only films to be buried with.
Hello and welcome to Films to be Buried With. My name is Brett Goldstein. I'm a comedian, an actor, a writer, a director, a fraudster, and I love films. As Bernard Schlink once said, I'm not frightened. I'm not frightened of anything. The more I suffer, the more I love. Having said that, Hereditary did proper shit me up, yeah. Every week, I invite a special guest over. I tell them they've died. Then I get them to discuss their life through the films that meant the most to them. Previous guests include Barry Jenkins, Himesh Patel, Sharon Stone, and even... But this week, it's the brilliant comedian, actor, and writer, Ruby McAllister. Head over to the Patreon at patreon.com/Brett Goldstein, where you get extra 20 minutes with Ruby. We talk about secrets, favourite beginnings and endings. You get the whole episode uncut and ad-free, and as a video. Check all of that out over at patreon.com/Brett Goldstein. So, Ruby McAllister. Ruby McAllister is a brilliant comedian and actor. You've seen her in all sorts of things. She just went and did the Edinburgh Festival, where she got absolutely rave reviews. So, do see her show if it is coming anywhere near you. We recorded this long before she was headed off to Edinburgh, so it's nice to know as you listen. It's a bit of a spoiler, but she absolutely stormed it. I think you're going to love this one. So that is it for now. I very much hope you enjoy episode 266 of Films to be Buried With. Hello and welcome to Films to be Buried With. It is me, Brett Goldstein, and I'm joined today by an actor, a writer, a comedian, a sketco, a stand-up, a seer, a light healer, and a birth charter. Someone from the stars, connected to the stars, who is a star. She's here. She's about to go to Edinburgh when we record this. When you hear this, she's probably won Edinburgh. Please welcome to the show the real live person that is this one, Ruby McAllister.
Oh my God. Hey, thanks. Thanks for having me. Oh my gosh, I loved that intro. That was the best one I've ever had.
Thank you, Ruby. It's delightful likewise, to see you. Thank you for likewise. Doing the show. Ruby, you're about to go and do... Is it your first Edinburgh?
It is. Oh my God. Yeah, it is. My God.
How do you feel about this?
I feel excited, but overwhelmed, as I think one is wont to do. But I feel like... I don't know. I'm projecting here, but I feel like for people in England, it's just like what is it more casual for people in England?
No, it's
never casual.
You get sort of used to it, but okay. It's never casual.
Okay, honey, it's never casual. Okay, good.
Yeah. Okay. You're still, you know, all the money you've earned in the year, you're going to now chuck down a drain
exactly.
in 1 month.
Exactly.
And lose your fucking mind.
And that's exciting. And it's very exciting to do that. And there's sort of like a cyclical sort of addiction to gambling sort of feeling to it. But I'm really excited. And today you're speaking with me when you know, the opening night is nigh. You know what I mean? It's like we're looking at something.
Forgive me for not knowing this. Is this your first hour show, or are you done?
This is no. This is my first hour, and I'm really starting. This first full assembled hour is really like the story of my first hour. A little bit. It's really I'm so glad to be here for so many reasons, but largely because it's, you know, a show about, I'm going to say death.
Oh, really?
I'm going to say it's about dead people.
Yeah, well, then you've come to the place, come to the right place. What may I ask, who's death, or is it about all death?
It's about sort of all death. It's about how my father ran a theater in Los Angeles, which is not, I'm going to say, and you probably know this at this point, it's not a theater town. I didn't know if you knew that about
it. Definitely not.
Yeah, it's not sort of a theater town. And my dad ran this theater, and I lived basically at this theater, and I ran the box office at this theater. It's called the Cornet Theater. It's now the Largo.
My favorite place.
Everyone's. So that theater, before it was the Largo, my father ran it. My father is not Flanagan. That's not who my father is. In fact,
well, I'm sorry for you.
Yeah, I know. Me too, man. But before it was before the Largo took over management, it was my dad was managing it, and I ran the box office every night. I was seeing so many psychotic, like Vanity Project one woman show plays. It was always that. It was like the darkest level of Hollywood I was witness to chronically. And on top of that, I found out that Charles Laughton, which maybe you know, or haunts the Cornet. He's the resident ghost of the Cornet. Yes, because he died 2 days before the opening night of Bertolt Brecht's premiere of Galileo Galilei. Charles Laughton directed the premiere, which happened to be in Los Angeles in like 1954, which is crazy. He died during the previews of Galileo Galilei, and he was rumored to have haunted the Cornet. And when I was a child, I was obsessed. This is when I like learned about ghosts, and I like became obsessed with Charles Laughton's ghost. And I had a really deep relationship with Charles Laughton's ghost. And
what do you mean? You saw him?
I saw him. I believed he was always around. I felt him watching over me.
Wow.
And then I became obsessed with like Hollywood, you know, in the international sense of Hollywood. Hollywood ghosts, like this whole other realm of my hometown. And so my show is like about all the ghosts that I was obsessed with.
Oh my God. I mean, talk about selling the show to me.
Good.
Can you tell me one ghost interaction?
Okay. Maybe I won't tell a Charles Laughton ghost story, but I'm going to tell you another one. Okay.
Okay.
And this is also a tip to anybody traveling to Los Angeles. Okay. So at the basin of the Hollywood Hills is this little sub neighborhood called Hollywood Land. And yes. Hollywood Land was the original real estate development that is why the Hollywood sign is there, right? We all know it used to say Hollywood Land, and then the land sort of crumbled
and
off,
then
whatever.
The Rocketeer crashed into it.
Exactly.
Into the land.
Yes. And then at the basin of, like, right below the Hollywood sign are these horse trails that have been there since the early 1900s, when that piece of land was where actually bandits used to camp in the hills. Because LA at the time was like the most dangerous place in the world. It was just like basically still the Wild West. So you can still go to these horse trails at the basin of this place. And I, you know, my dad had a friend from out of town who also had a daughter who later became my best friend, but that's a different story. But I was trying to impress her. I was trying to be like, we got to show her a good time in LA. Like, we got to do it, right? And so I was like, let's take her to these trails. So you basically board these horses that are like so overly medicated are really maybe not treated fabulously, but it's like sets the scene. You know what I mean? It's all part of the allure. And you sort of like hoist your body on these horses that are so tired, and they are like going up these trails by the Hollywood sign. And it's like pretty fab to do if you have nothing to do in LA. Okay. And I
How old are you when this is happening?
I'm like six.
Okay.
I'm 6'7" around there.
Okay.
And I'm pretty like, I'm really newly anointed into my obsession with phantoms or ghosts, right? And I'm like really upset. I'm just totally obsessed. And I'm so I was like open to it. You know what I mean? I was like out for an experience. And so I was like riding this little horse, and it was sunset. And I'm riding past the Hollywood sign, and I see two, oh my God, this is a little scary. I see like two little feet. Like not just like little feet walking past the Hollywood sign out of the corner of my eye. And I'm like, I'm really startled. And I'm like telling my dad, like, and he knows that I'm obsessed with ghosts. So it's like, maybe I saw it in my head, or maybe I saw, you know what I mean? We're not here to judge. We're not here to get our binoculars, you know, our little stethoscopes out. But I saw some feet. Okay. That's what I thought. And bare so feet. Then I started bare feet.
Okay.
And that's when I found out, you know, and this is the thing about ghosts. This is my selling point about ghosts, is that you can believe in ghosts. You don't have to believe in ghosts. But if you do believe in ghosts, or if you indulge the belief in ghosts, it's actually a gateway drug to be a historian. It's how you become a freaking historian, man. That's what I'm saying. Because I go, I saw feet by the Hollywood sign. What's with that? And I do some research, and I find out about Peg Entwistle, who was the singular, if not most famous, I don't think she's the only person who did this, but she was the first person to throw herself off the H of the Hollywood sign in 1929. And I mean, like, that's a one-to-one, man. Like, I was totally seeing her ghost, right?
Wow. Yeah, right.
And then, like, Peg Entwistle is, like, if you get into like Hollywood macabre lore, she is like OG. She is like one of the main spooky stories of Hollywood is the Peg Entwistle. She's the first person to throw herself off the Hollywood sign.
So you think you saw Peg Entwistle's feet? I'm not judging.
You know what I'm saying? It might have not been hers. I'm just saying it was a gateway drug
because of whichever ghost it was, it taught you about Peggy.
Exactly. And it just fed my lifelong addiction to this level of Hollywood darkness.
When did you last see a ghost?
I think the last time I saw a ghost was about 10 years ago.
Hmm.
Yeah. In college, I had a ghost visit me quite often.
Who was this ghost and were you scared?
I was scared. Because he would visit me. I like lived in this room on this campus in my school in New England, and very haunted spot in the world. But different type of vibe, you know, to the Hollywood ghosts. Not as glamorous, to say the least. But it was like this blonde guy sitting on the foot of my bed like every night.
Whoa.
I would see, for like a semester, which is about 6 months.
What was he doing? Just watching you? Sat there watching you?
He was just constant. And he was just always sitting and like looking around. And I eventually, I think once, I was just sort of asleep. You know what I mean?
Right.
But then I would like come to. Yeah. And I would be like, after like the 10th time he did this, I was like, are you lost?
Oh, shit.
Which is an amazing question to ask any ghost.
Yeah.
He didn't talk, but he like acknowledged, he was like, I was like, are you lost? Do you need help? Like, this isn't where you're supposed to be. And then after I talked to him, he went away.
Oof, Ruby. Are you lost?
Sorry. Am I lost? Wow.
It's a great question. That is a great question.
It's a great question.
Living or the dead.
It is. And like, there is this like whole school of belief in like ghost hunting, which is like a whole other genre. This is a whole other topic. But there's like this new sort of more accepted vibe that instead of like ghost hunting with like lasers and guns and this like Ghostbusters level type thing, there's this new sort of millennial approach, which is to communicate with the ghosts and give them what they need. And that's actually how you unhaunt a space, which I actually really think is cool. I think that's a cool, sort of a cool thing.
Yeah. What do you think this geezer needed, the blonde geezer at the end of your bed?
Well, he was definitely young, Brett.
Oh, in England, geezer means...
Oh, you just say geezer, like, just like chump.
Just guy.
Like bloke, whatever, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, sorry. In America, it means...
No, it's okay. No, that's okay. Yeah, it's and okay. In America, that means he's like totally old. But geezer. Sorry. I'm saying geezer too now.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm kissing a geezer tonight. Yeah, whatever. Totally awesome. I think what he wanted, I think he was genuinely lost. I think he didn't realize he was passed on.
Right. Fuck. Jesus.
I think. I know. Sorry. Not to out macabre your macabre show, but.
No. Well, it's funny you say that. It's really funny you say that because I forgot to tell you something. And now I'm realizing, oh, you don't know either.
Mm.
You've died. You're dead.
Fuck.
Are you lost?
Yeah, I'm definitely lost. If you're just bringing this news on me now, yeah. I'm like, I am shocked to my core.
I guess for a long time I've been thinking, what is she doing sitting at the end of my bed? I should probably say something about
it. Are you lost? Yeah, I'm definitely lost. Oh, honey, I'm definitely lost. Yeah.
How did you die, Ruby?
I think the last thing I remember, if you're telling me that I'm dead right now, the last thing I remember is I literally got a cold. I got a chill. I caught a chill.
You were chilled to death. You were so chill. You were too chill. You died.
Yeah, I was actually too cool. Yeah. I was literally too cool for this mortal coil a little bit.
Wow.
Yeah. No.
Too chilled to live.
Too chilled to live.
Wow. Your reputation precedes you.
Yeah, exactly. I lived as I died,
Yeah, totally chill.
Mm-hmm, totally chill. Totally chill.
What a tragic death. How old do you want to be when you die?
Fuck. I would say, like, actually, like, are we really talking here?
Yeah, we're really talking.
I think either 36, don't tempt fate, okay? Or, because that's like a nice number. I think that's a very sexy number. 36 is an incredibly sexy number.
Yeah.
Or 93.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, you you can see the future, right?
Yeah, a little bit.
What does your future say? Do you know when you will die? Will you die at 93?
There's actually, as you mentioned in my incredibly unbelievable intro, I do astrology. I have an astrology practice. But in my chart, it either says that I'm going to die old or I'm going to die by the hand. And I'm not joking. By the hand of a lover. Like murdered. There's an indication. But I don't think that's going to happen. I actually don't think that's going to happen.
So every time you're with a lover and they get like slightly annoyed, you're like, uh-oh.
I'm like, here it comes.
Here we go.
Yeah.
I shouldn't have forgot the milk. Here we go.
Yeah, exactly. Wow. Yeah, I'm walking on eggshells. But no, I think, I don't know. Yeah, that's like one indication in my chart. But I don't think I ascribe to that. You know, it's not set in stone. This is all malleable. It's all a conversation.
Do you feel that you're connected to the light? What is it? Do you feel you're channeling something or are you just looking at numbers?
I think like it's a little bit of both.
Okay.
And I think I wish I could take myself seriously enough to say I was channeling light. But I just can't. I think it's hard for you to
be a comedian and sort of a spiritual advisor or whatever it is. I don't know. It's really hard.
I do think I will say that the best people in my life that have given me spiritual guidance, advice, whatever, are funny people. I think they're hand in hand. I think wisdom. I think being funny is so important for so many. I know there's all this talk about like, you know, comedians are like the most tortured types of human beings, that they're dark, blah, blah, blah. But I also think like if you don't have a sense of humor about yourself, you're sort of dead in the water, I think, a little bit.
Yeah.
A little bit. But that's just a hot take. That's just a hot take. Yeah. But yeah.
Okay. Do you worry about your own death? Is it something you fear? Or welcome.
Can I ask you a question? Were you ever a hypochondriac?
I don't think in an extreme way. I fear illness for sure, but I don't always think I'm ill. You know what I mean? Like, if someone sneezes near me, I'm like, uh-oh.
Oh, wow.
But I don't necessarily think, now I'm going to die because they sneezed. I just think we need to.
Oh, got it.
They need to be gone.
Yeah. I think like my fear is that. That's absolutely nice. That's actually a really nice thing to say, is what I'm going to say. I used to be a really insane hypochondriac, which I think maybe also was like some of the spiritual stuff helped me through that a little bit. And, recently, yeah, Mike, I guess I fear death in so much as I fear, not knowing if it's happening or not. That would freak me out. Like if I was just like hit by a bus.
Oh, you want it like to be slow and you know it's happening really slowly.
Yeah. And I like, and I want to be like, adieu. Like I really want to like say goodbye to everything.
Oh, okay.
Very romantic in a romantic way, you know.
So you want sort of like a good looking slow terminal illness.
100%. 100%.
What do you think happens when you die then with all your interactions with ghosts? What do you think? Do you think there's an afterlife? The people that are lost, are they going somewhere?
I do unabashedly, and I will say, I guess I have to say this without any sort of conceit, but I do believe in an afterlife. I do.
Great.
I don't entirely understand what happens. I do know that not everybody becomes a ghost. I think that's like a general consensus, is that not everybody does. And I do believe that. And I don't necessarily want to become a ghost. I do think like, you know, I think there is this like lack of recognition between, you know, and then there's this other, since we're all getting into quantum physics now. Mm-hmm. Yes. Don't you think that's quantum physics is hot, hot, hot. Am I wrong?
Oh, Brett? Yeah. No, it's really in again.
It's so in again. It's so freaking in. And I think like, so I can say this, like, you know, then there's this other idea that it's like, are they just two dimension, you know, the simultaneous time briefly overlapping and our interaction with that? It's like, I don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
I can't say. Yeah. So there's some of that.
So you don't think a ghost is like someone who hasn't made it to the other side, as in they are literally lost on their way to the other side. Some people don't become ghosts because they go straight to heaven, and other people are ghosts because they get lost.
I don't believe in heaven. I'm not really believing in heaven.
Okay.
But I am thinking like you go into like the warm light if you aren't attached, if you're ready to let go.
Mm-hmm.
And then you like rejoin. You rejoin the cosmic, you know, recycling machine. You know what I mean?
I do know what you mean, yeah.
Yeah.
You become one with the higher consciousness that you always were, and then you plop out again into a different life.
I do. Yeah. Yes, I do. And I think I do believe, I don't hold on too strongly to understanding what my past lives are. I think that's sort of, I'm not super into that. But I do like people that are. I love hanging out with people who feel very connected with their past lives. That's really fun for me.
Yeah.
And some people have told me some wild shit about supposedly what my past life is. I do believe all actors, so shout out Brett, also you. I do believe all actors were at some point soldiers.
Explain this theory, please. That seems like the opposite job.
And there we go. Because okay, I think like on. Once, I do think there's like this militant aspect to all actors, like this real seriousness and like over-regulation or ability to overly regulate. But I think it is the opposite job. And I think that's why, like, once you fight in a war in your next life, you want to like express yourself and like,
That's interesting. That's interesting.
I do think all actors were reincarnated soldiers. And I think that's why, honey, at the 21st century, after two world wars, there's so many freaking actors all over the goddamn place. Yeah.
Because they were all soldiers and now they're like, I need someone to bring me tea.
Ding, ding, ding. Yeah. They're like, you know what sounds great? Waiting around on set for 12 hours a day to say two lines.
Yeah.
Yeah. You get it. I think you totally get it.
I actually do get it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It explains sort of why you get like a lot of entitled actors, because they're like going, I was a fucking soldier. I fought in a war.
Or it's like
where's my stuff? Give me my stuff.
100%. And it's like, you wonder why actors are so like solipsistic that we can just keep going back in on ourselves. And it's because we were in the trenches, my dude. Our helmets were on, our heads were down. We were so scared. We had no space for our emotions. I don't know if this
excuses the behavior of actors, but it's...
I know. If only we could litigate with past lives.
Yeah, that's such a great idea.
I know.
Yeah, because often you go with people, you go, oh, that person's an awful dickhead, but you know, they did.
Yeah.
If you knew what they've been through, and you usually mean their childhood or when they were a teenager, but if you could go, if you knew what they've been through 100 years ago, they were in the war.
Honey, you would have absolute compassion for them.
Yeah, you really would. You'd be like, oh, no, listen, hey, get them their tea, let them shout at everyone.
Yeah, they got trench foot. That's how they died. It's like, honey, oh my God, you had trench foot in your past life. Pardonnez-moi. I'm so sorry.
I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
You take all the time you need in that trailer.
Exactly. I think we're getting close to that.
Yeah.
I think we're getting closer to that level of compassion. I do.
Well, listen. There is a heaven. You don't like the word heaven, but it's just the bit where the higher consciousness all hangs out.
Okay, I like it.
And you're very welcome there, and it's filled with your favorite thing. What's your favorite thing?
I think my favorite thing is like some music.
Okay, well then it's beautiful.
What's your favorite thing? What do you say?
I'm not a guest on this podcast and never would.
No.
I think anyone who agrees to do this is mad.
No. It's your idea, dude. What is your favorite thing? Water? What's your favorite thing?
I'm still waiting. You know, that's why I guess I'm here. I'm here every week waiting for the right answer. But music's pretty good. You get to heaven and there's music everywhere.
Or it's like music and seltzer. Music and seltzer with like a lemon.
There's seltzer and lemon handed to you by beautiful musicians. It's wonderful. Everyone's so excited to see you. Everything sounds lovely. But they want to talk to you about your life, but they want to talk about it through the medium of film. And the first thing they ask you, Ruby McCollister,
what's
the first film you remember seeing?
Okay, this is such a complicated one. So I remember the first one that I have a visceral, really amazing memory watching, even though I think I technically watched movies before this, but the first one that came to mind was Edward Scissorhands with my family.
Oh, I love that film.
And I rewatched it recently and it
holds up.
Oh my God. When I was a child, I watched it with my mother, who is also a native Angeleno and a goth. And basically raised another goth, you know what I mean? More or less, you know. I'm a light in the loafers goth a little bit, but so she was like totally down for me to watch this movie. My parents were also in theater, so there was a lot of theater actors in Edward Scissorhands. So it was like our family friends were sort of in the movie or whatever. But I was thoroughly transformed as a child, and I was convinced. I didn't relate to Edward Scissorhands. I obviously related to Kim. Mm. And I think that was like the first depiction of a redhead I'd ever seen as well.
Oh, God, I forgot she's a redhead.
Yeah, she has like dyed orange hair. Yeah. So that was really significant for me. And I then was convinced every night in my like parents' shitty West Hollywood rental that we lived in, that on the bars on my windows that Edward, I had like this deep fantasy that Edward Scissorhands was like racking his little fingers.
Like Freddy Krueger on your windows.
Yeah, but he was sort of like.
But in a sexy way.
Yeah. But I was like really frightened and really charmed by this fantasy of like, Edward Scissorhands is like obsessed with me and like, you know what I mean? Like, and I was really freaked out for a while about like Edward, the fantasy, the imagined fantasy of Edward racking his little fingers.
The music to Edward Scissorhands is one of the tracks that I would like played at my funeral as my coffin
really
comes in with snow, indoor snow.
Oh my God. Oh, that's really sad. That's really chilling.
Well, it's a great film. Great film. And I don't think
it is a great film.
Mad doesn't come up.
It doesn't?
Yeah, I love that film.
That's really weird.
So weird. Are you an only child?
Yeah, obviously.
Yeah, okay. I mean,
are you an only child?
No, I have a sister.
Yeah, you don't seem like an only child.
What's the film that scared you the most? Do you like being scared?
I do. I love being scared. I'm addicted to being scared.
Great.
Well, everybody probably says, what does everybody say? The Exorcist, right?
It comes up a lot.
Yeah, obviously. That was a legitimately scary film for me. I also think the deeper cut of that is Whatever Happened to Baby Jane.
Deep cut.
Yeah.
Deep cut. Scary.
And that was really scary for me. Yeah. So that's Betty Davis and Joan Crawford.
Scary? Not famously thought of as a scary film, I'd say. Why so scary? It's dark.
It's dark, but it's like about, you know, Betty Davis plays this woman in her 60s who was a vaudevillian child star and still has her outfit from being a vaudevillian child star, you know what I mean? And like failed to become a movie star and is at 60. Also, she has like her sister, Joan Crawford, is paralyzed from an accident that was supposedly Baby Jane's fault, Betty Davis's fault. She has this paralyzed sister upstairs and she's like trying to have her act happen again. Like she's trying to like put her act back up. And so she puts on these clothes to make her look like a baby doll. And she's like in her 60s and has like powdered makeup. Like it's like, it's very, very, very scary. It's very scary. And I remember when I saw that as a child, also with my goth mother being like,
yeah,
this is a fabulous film or whatever. I remember like brushing my teeth and you know what I mean? And like feel, you know, when you have that scary movie feeling where it's like suddenly you're alone after you see it for the first time and then you're, and then it's like, and then the characters truly begin to like invade your like space. Is that just me? No, that's everybody.
No,
right?
No, that's not just you.
Yeah. So then I remember like imagining closing the mirror of my bathroom and seeing Baby Jane, seeing this like old woman in a baby doll outfit is like,
I mean,
that's really scary. And she sings this
Sing me the song.
Oh my God. This is the Baby Jane song. Okay. I've written a letter to Daddy, whose address is heaven above. I've written, dear Daddy, I miss you. And I'm right, like, whatever. You know what I mean? That's what it is. But it's like so
scary. That was excellent. You got a voice for an angel.
Like, I've written a letter to Daddy. Like, that's like so creepy.
Creepy as fuck. Funny, there were these films way ahead. That and Sunset Boulevard, both these films about like aging Hollywood stars that can't let go, that are completely the fucking madness.
I know. And it's remarkable that I decided to become a performer because I really was like obsessed with these stories of like, of tragedy and failure and delusion. And I Sunset Boulevard is coming up.
Let's not spoil that.
It's coming up. Yeah.
What's the film that made you cry the most? Do you cry easy? Do you cry a lot?
I do.
What?
No, I know. I mean, I haven't cried recently so much, but okay. So this is my answer. This is my stock answer, basically. And I hate to be so on brand. I am like psychotically on brand sometimes. So this one's another psychotically on brand answer. But the film that makes me cry the most is A Star Is Born. But it's it's the Judy Garland version.
Okay. Okay.
Which is the best one by far. And there's this scene. There's this scene where she is, you know, she has an alcoholic husband, as we all know, in the Lady Gaga version too. Mm-hmm. She has an alcoholic husband in this version. Judy Garland plays a movie star, not a musician, not like the Barbara Streisand version either. Judy Garland plays a musical, you know, like a movie star, like how Judy Garland was, like she sang, she danced, she acted, whatever. And she's in the middle of doing, oh God, this, I could cry just thinking about it. She's in the middle of doing a musical number where she's dressed as, and forgive me, but this is the term. This is the aesthetic term. She's dressed as a hobo, okay?
Okay.
That is what the term is, unfortunately. Antiquated, I know. Okay, listen. So she has like a charcoal beard on, like this, like freckles and a blacked out tooth, like Judy Garland, okay? And she's like doing this number and they're like, okay, take a break. And like and she goes into her dressing room and the head of the studio is like, your husband is really making a fool of himself. And it's like, is he okay? And then she breaks down in this makeup.
Oh, shit.
She is crying. And she is like, and it's Judy Garland crying. Like, and you can see that she is actually in such despair. And it's like, I forgot the exact line, but, you know, it's just like, it's her crying. Like, it's so hard to, you know, love somebody who doesn't love themselves, you know, all of this, just devastation. And then it's like, okay, Esther, you got 5 minutes. And then she like, and then it's like the next cut is her like wiping her tears and like doing that, the next take. And there, that I reference that scene all the time. It's one of the most poignant scenes, I think, in like of the 50s, basically. And it's, you know, George Cukor directed it. It's like a hugely massive. It's such a beautiful film. And I think if you know anything about Judy Garland, it's so devastating. And it's just such a relatable, I think it's a position that I think many people have felt. It's not just for actors. I think it's like this really universal feeling of like, there's something terrible that's going on that I have no control over. And yet I still have to sort of like continue on.
I have to do public face.
Yeah. And I have to like go to work or I have to like just keep it together. And I think that's like such a, ooh, God, I just cry over that.
Great answer. Really good. What's the film that you love? Most people don't like it. It's not critically acclaimed, but you love it unconditionally.
Okay, this is a good answer. I really love Confessions of a Shopaholic.
That is a great... you couldn't answer better to that question.
I adore this movie. I think it's actually a really important film.
Really?
Isla Fisher playing, an American, also a redhead.
Mm-hmm.
Not to brag.
Coincidence.
Who the villain of this, and I guess maybe, I don't really understand the credit system in the UK, but to be an American is to have a lot of debt. That's a huge thing in America. And basically, literally the villain of this movie is her credit card company.
Right.
And it's like amazing. Like it's about her like struggling to get out of debt. And it's like,
and she keeps shopping. Not,
and she just can't stop. And it's like, there's so much in there. That is like, that is such a great movie. It's such an amazingly important film. It's an amazingly important film.
Then
For obvious reasons.
I would double bill it with 50 Shades of Grey, which I think is a profound statement about American capitalism, that film. I'd put them together.
I mean, I've never seen 50 Shades of Grey, should I? You're saying
I think it. I think if you like Confessions of a Shopaholic, for the reasons that you like it, I think you like 50 Shades of Grey, which is basically a porno about money.
Right.
I don't think it's about sex at all. I think it's about consumerism. Like, and that's all also, the shots of it are like, sexy building where money is made, sexy helicopter that money, you know
what I mean? Yes, yes, yes. I mean, I think like with Confessions of a Shopaholic, also similarly to what you're saying is like 50 Shades isn't about sex. Like a guy doesn't really enter the chat of the movie like until she pays her credit card down.
Wow.
Isn't that fascinating? It's like, dude, it's like, it's just, and
what,
it's
the guy
about,
she can't find love until she's paid off her debt. Is that what it's saying?
Yes. Right. That's what it's saying, which is like, a far out, I don't think that's true, but I do think, I do think that's a crippling fear for a lot of Americans.
Do you think it's like a fear about love though? Like who, go on, finish that sentence.
Like, I don't remember the amount of money she's in debt. I think it's like, as all movies, like super low. You know, I think she probably has like $5,000, you know, like I don't think it's like a ton of money she owes her creditors. But it's about like, obviously, like a girl who's like neglectful of paying her bills, that she's sort of just spending, whatever, that she's like from a lower class background, that she was trying to make it big in New York, that she needed these clothes to do so, which 100%, like that's real, right?
Yeah, that's real.
And I think there's like a real, who doesn't have fear if they have, like if I had a ton of, I mean, do you know, who doesn't have fear about their debt?
Yeah, very relatable film.
You know what I mean?
Your dog just barked as if to say, yeah,
yeah,
I get it.
100%, yeah.
On the other end, film. What's the film that you used to love, but you've seen it recently and you've gone, I don't like this anymore, I've changed?
I'm sure a lot of people talk about this movie, also probably from America. There's a few answers I put for this one because it was many that I feel this way about. But I think like the most poignant one is Garden State. Does everyone say that?
They don't all say that.
No? Not like a million Americans say that? That's interesting. What do people say?
Woody Allen often comes up around here.
Oh, okay. But I'm also saying, does everybody also say Blade Runner?
No.
Honestly, I'm changing. It's Blade Runner.
Okay, talk to
me. Can you believe actually how boring Blade Runner is? And it's like actually not a good movie. And it has just like a few good shots and really good costumes. It's like the most boring movie ever. Everybody's totally out of their minds and we're stoned to the gods. The last, if they say Blade Runner's boring, it's a bad movie, period. Sorry. It's like an amazing book by Philip K. Dick. And it was like translated like purely stylistically and like is not, I don't think it's that good. I really actually don't think it's that good. Sorry. I think it's boring as hell.
I would shut down your Twitter when this comes out if I were you.
I know. This is going to be, it's not the first time that happened. Anyway.
What is the film? Yeah. That means the most to you, not necessarily the film itself is any good, but the experience you had around seeing it will always make it special to you, Ruby McAllister.
Okay, so I was going to talk about how I saw Tar and
yes.
I was going to talk about how I saw Tar and I never finished Tar because when I saw it with my mother, who I realize I'm constantly bringing up my mom, and I guess she's the only person who ever watched movies with me in my entire life. There was a man crawling under the seat.
What?
Yeah, crawling under my seat. And then I said, excuse me, sir, are you okay? And he had diamond earrings on and a nurse outfit on. There was something going on, but whatever. And then he told me, I like your shoes.
Absolutely terrifying. So much scarier than any of the ghost stories you told.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then what?
And honey, my shoes weren't cute. I was wearing like really banged up sneakers. Like I was wearing some crazy shoes. It was really scary. And then I left the theater. He followed me out. We had this altercation. It was like a crazy Tar. It's like, and I never finished it.
Jesus.
But that was
what
a crazy
one.
But then
what happened to the guy in the end, the nurse?
I said, I'm not going to call the cops. Just leave me alone. And he did. And then I carried on with my day. But my mother, who was like raised by a British person, I turned to her and I go, "Mom, I have to leave the theater." Not to call you guys out, but I sometimes think this is a little British of her. She goes like, I go, "Mom, I have to leave the theater. There's a man under my seat."
Jesus
and
Christ.
And then she goes, "Okay, then move seats." I go, "No, it's actually, I can't do that. My experience has been ruined." And then she goes, I don't like letting fear win.
But the guy is currently under your seat.
No, at this point, he's crawling back to his.
Okay. So she says, "I don't like letting fear win."
"I don't like letting fear win." And I said, which I think is sort of, you know, approximate to "keep calm, carry on." Yeah. You know what I mean? The famous "keep calm, carry on." And I go, "We're past the point of fear, Mom. This is actually happening." And I go like, and then I'm like, and then I escort myself out of the theater.
And your mom stays in to finish the film?
She stays in an extra 20 minutes and she's really pissed off that I left. And she's pissed off.
Did she not see the geezer under your chair?
I think she was like thinking I was maybe being histrionic. You know what I mean?
Do you think it's possible that, and I'm not denying your experience, that it was a ghost? When you saw a man in a nurse under your thing, did you say, "Are you lost, sir? Sir, are you lost?"
What I did say, though, actually chills, and I'm getting chills because he might be a ghost now. I go, "Do you need help?" That was actually what I asked him. I said, "Do you need help, sir?"
Because the part of this story that's weird, and this is with all due respect to your mum, your mum is the weird part of this story.
Because it's like she couldn't tell what the crisis was.
If she's not going, "Jesus Christ, there's a giant man under your seat. Run for your life." She's going, "Don't worry about it. You're being silly." Uh-huh. And you're going, "No."
I might have been the only one able to see him, is what you're saying. Yeah. Wow, I never even thought of that, Brett.
I sort of hope it was a ghost because it's so disturbing. It's much more disturbing if it's not a ghost. You know what I mean? I'm sorry this happened. Horrible.
It's okay. You know, like things happen. It's New York City. I was in New York City. You know, things happen. And I was fine. I know. I didn't. But I think it was fine more or less. You know, like things happen and I'm fine. But it will forever. I do know what happens in Tar. I know the final scene or whatever. Like it's like, I know what happens in Tar. But I don't think I'll ever.
Yeah, that would have tainted that film for you.
Yeah, I don't think I'll ever. With the man under your seat. Exactly. Yeah.
Absolutely fair enough.
Period.
Maureen, what's this I hear about you going to film school? I am. I want to gain valuable skills while making films and developing my creativity. So I'm attending the New York Film Academy. I'm thinking about becoming one of them people that writes the numbers on the title board. NYFA is a very respected film school. I hear they offer a variety of options to meet your educational goals, whether you want a BFA or MFA degree or want to learn at a quicker pace with a short-term program. That's right. They've got workshops and summer camps in filmmaking, acting, cinematography, screenwriting, producing, game design, musical theatre and more. Are you attending in New York? Might do. They have multiple campuses in some amazing locations like New York, LA, Miami, Italy, Australia and online. And you can learn more about the New York Film Academy at nyfa.edu. That's nyfa.edu. Thanks, Maureen.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase, every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
Hello, my neighbour Maureen. What's this I hear about you getting a promotion at the office? Didn't you just get promoted last month? It's all thanks to Canva. I've been nailing every meeting with AI-powered Canva presentations. Isn't that Canva's AI slide generator where you just describe your presentation in a few words and Canva presentations will generate captivating slides in seconds? That's right. And to top it off, I use Magic Write, Canva's AI text generator, to perfect my points. Sounds brilliant, Maureen. No more copying and pasting from other programs. No more app switching. Can Canva Docs with Magic Write generate any text you want for work? Yes. Sales proposals, marketing plans? Yeah. Meeting agendas, ratings of all 12 Muppet movies using the extensive point system that I developed at age 12?
Anyone can save time with Canva's AI-powered tools. Generate your draft fast with Canva Docs at canva.com, designed for work.
Oh, thanks, my name is Maureen. Yeah, thank you. What is the film you most relate to, and would it have been Tar?
The film I most relate to, I'm really going to say the most annoying answer.
Ghost.
Do people just hate their answers?
No, do most people go like, oh, my answers aren't very clever. People always say, and they're always good. Everyone's answer is good if they're true.
I know, everyone's answer is so revealing. When I listen to past episodes, there's such perfect portraits of people. Unfortunately, I'm going to say the most relatable film is either Slums of Beverly Hills, which was a big film for me. Natasha Lyonne looked a lot like me.
A lot like you. I've been thinking that this whole time.
Yeah. And she, in that movie, is like, you know, I might sound like a nepotism baby because my father managed a theater in Los Angeles, but it is sort of the slums of Beverly Hills. It's the lowest rung of the entertainment industry. You know what I mean? It is it's one step before writing home to mom and going back to Kansas or whatever. You know, like it's not fab. So I related to this character of having this sort of this dad that's trying to keep everything afloat in sort of a chic, glamorous neighborhood, but can't really cut it. And you're sort of at the mercy and the whim of, you know, like a lower aspect of a glamorous situation, the back end of a glamorous situation. And I really related to that. And then on top of it, you know, I looked so similar to her. Like, it was like crazy experience.
Crazy. I get that.
Yeah.
What is the sexiest film you've ever seen?
Oh my gosh. Well, I just saw it, Brad.
Oh, wow.
I can't believe this. Because, oh my God, if we had talked like a few weeks ago, it would have been a completely different answer.
What would it have been a few weeks ago?
Breaking the Waves.
Whoa. Okay, let's go to In the Cut, which is a great answer.
In the Cut is an amazing movie by Jane Campion.
Yeah.
And Mark Ruffalo. You've seen this.
I've seen this film.
How did you, as a man, did you deal with Mark Ruffalo? Because Mark Ruffalo is the hottest person.
He's very sexy.
That character, the way he's dealing with that woman, is the sexiest thing I've ever seen in my entire life. I thought my molecules are changing. I was like, how is everyone not? It was shocking to my core. How did you, as a man, deal with seeing Mark Ruffalo? You're an actor.
Did it make me go, I should give up life because he's the hottest man in the world? Is that what you
mean? Or you go like, how am I going to step up my game? Like, you're like,
How am I going to have sex like Mark Ruffalo?
Yeah, exactly. All I'm saying, everyone who wants to have sex with some women, channel some Mark Ruffalo in the Cut.
100%.
Real tip, real advice. Yeah.
Great answer. But a very misunderstood film when it first came out.
Totally.
Maligned.
Yeah. So wait, can you talk to me about this? Because it was 2003. What was the vibe of the film?
This is the thing that happened. This should be an episode of You Were Wrong About or whatever.
This
was sort of the thing that kind of ended Meg Ryan's career, which was, and I remember like half seeing it. It's one of those things that I remembered wrong until I saw it again, which is that there was a talk show host called Michael Parkinson. And he was like the best one in England. I don't know what the equivalent would be in America, but, you know, fairly long form interviews with movie stars and stuff. And he was really good. It was always good. And Meg Ryan went on it to promote In the Cut. And they had a very awkward interaction. And the way it was sort of talked about in the press was like, she was hard work. She was a nightmare. Like, it was like, she came out of it very badly. And it sort of ruined her reputation or something like that. Like, it was
really?
Like, it was like pre-internet. So it was much more like movie stars were gods. And then here was this woman that we had all loved kind of being shit on TV and in this interview and being rude to national treasure Michael Parkinson and all that. Anyway, I then, years later, saw this on the internet, this interview. He's being fucking horrible to her.
Really? What is it? Yeah. And he's like asking her prodding questions or whatever.
He clearly hates the film and he's clearly like triggered by the film.
Right.
Because she says something like, I think the aim of this film was to make a non-romantic romance film. She says something like that. And he says, why would you want to do that? What's wrong with romance? And he gets really sort of defensive. You know what I mean? Like, she's essentially saying this was like a feminist telling of a sexual love story. And he seems to be like offended or scared of what she's saying. And so he's really being quite difficult with her until eventually she kind of shuts down. And then he goes, what do you want me to do now? And she says, maybe we should just wrap it up. And he goes, okay, well, that was Meg Ryan. And it's like a nightmare. It's just a nightmare.
But also, the weird part is that it's so evident that this type of character became like totally like watermarked by Nicole Kidman. And then I did research. Yeah. Like, it's so weird. Like, you look at Meg Ryan and you're like, this is a Nicole Kidman character.
But also, it's years ahead of its time, that film, when you think about it. Now, that film would be like, yeah, of course, everyone, yeah. It was years ahead.
I guess it's totally years ahead, but I say, you know, when American writers can go pencils up again, I go, you have to, the level of sexuality is so, like, dangerous. There's so little films that are actually doing anything. And it's like, sexuality in that way is very campy. There's a camp aspect to it, which is why In the Cut is such a complicated film. And at first you're like, is this a piece of shit? Like, is this like the worst film ever made or the best film ever? Because it's like to talk about murder and sex and a single woman and all of this, like you're saying, a non-romantic romance film. It's so camp. There's something so corny about it. And it's like, I don't know. I wonder, maybe we as a culture no longer can like take the cringe or something, but there's like, it's such a complicated or like really I don't have many other examples of that type of writing or that type of romance. But you also look at this like Nicole Kidman thing and I go, Nicole Kidman, this was like a Nicole Kidman character. Nicole Kidman was the first pick for that role, I found out. Yes, yeah. And she turned it down because she was tired from her divorce from Tom Cruise. She was too exhausted. So it went to Meg Ryan, but Nicole Kidman's name is still on as executive producer on the film, which is fascinating. Yeah,
it
is. Crazy.
You're right. It's very much a Nicole Kidman part. You're right.
Yeah, but it's fascinating that Meg Ryan's career, like you're saying, like it was totally never heard from again. We never heard from her again. It's so sad. She's so great.
So sad. She's so great. There's a subcategory to this question. Troubling boners, worrying why-dons. Film you found arousing that you weren't sure you should. What is it, Ruby?
Mine's a really pretentious, really bad one.
Right.
This is, I don't know. Well, it's Death in Venice.
Oh, wow. Okay. I mean, that's
which is
a great
answer. But it's about a troubling boner.
Mm-hmm.
It's about a troubling arousal. And it's like about two men. And who is it? Oh my God. It's Dick Bogarde. It's right?
Dirk Bogarde?
Dirk. He's amazing. He's so amazing. Servant is also a troubling boner film too, if you've ever seen Servant.
Is that the one with Charlotte Rampling?
Yes, and it's about Dirk Bogarde plays. Yes. No. Maybe Charlotte Rampling's not in it, but it's like, it's about like Dirk Bogarde is a servant to this like young rich guy in the 60s. It's a very scary movie too. It's so good and hot and weird. And it's about like two men being like obsessed with each other and like you don't know if it's gay and it might not be. It's like that's a really crazy, horrendous boner movie. And Death in Venice is also a similar category of like it's about two guys and it's disturbing and watching it is so disturbing and but you're obsessed with it. And Dirk Bogarde is a real troubling boner actor. He's so hot.
Troubling boner, yeah.
Yes, it's every single movie he does is like, why is this sort of sexy and why is this so upsetting?
You really
that's
get
a complicated
it.
to This is like great. A complicated answer. Because Death in Venice is about a young boy. And there's like a whole freaking documentary about how casting that kid was like the worst thing that's ever happened. You know, like it's like, that's a really troubling one. And like Annie Hall is a similar one, you know, it's like, that's so, you want, it's so fun. And then obviously, you know, it's like a similar, but Death in Venice is Magini. And there was also that new meme that was circling around the summer. That was Dirk Bogarde in Death in Venice, like in a beach chair. And it's like me this summer, like instead of Pot Girl Summer, it's like Dirk Bogarde being sickly in the sun. And that is a good meme. That's a good meme.
Dirk Bogarde, sick summer.
Yeah.
What's objectively the greatest film of all time?
Since I couldn't. Yeah. Okay, let's go for it. I'm going to say The Wizard of Oz.
Okay.
Oh my God, this is such a hard question, dude. These are hard questions.
They are.
They're terribly hard. Wizard of Oz, obviously, because like it changed like the unconscious of the whole world or whatever. You know what I mean? Like we're always like thinking about the Wizard of Oz.
Yeah, and we are always saying, I've seen behind the curtain now. I've seen the wizard. I say it every day.
I said it today. I said, I was explaining it, my existential feeling at the moment. And I said, there's no illusion of a wizard anymore. There is just a man.
Yeah.
I think about it a lot. Yeah. And the Munchkin, the Emerald City, like every single thing about it is punctured. It's also like one of the first films many people see. And I think that's an interesting fact too. And it was Technicolor. It's like the first, like those colors.
Yeah.
It's a great film. It's a great movie. I rewatched it recently and it's really moving. It's really moving.
It's a good film.
You're crying, crying.
What's the film you could or have watched the most over and over again?
Okay, so then this is when we're coming back full circle. We're going, Sunset Boulevard is the most watched film I've ever watched. Great movie, everyone has. Please.
Fantastic question for you. Have you seen the Andrew Lloyd Webber Sunset Boulevard musical?
Oh my God, I haven't. Have you?
I've seen it a number of times, and I tell you this, I really like it.
Really?
And I tell you why I like it. And I think I like it because I really like the story, and the music's really good. And it's like, it's just a fucking great story. And now they've just set it to music. And it's almost word for word the film. It just occasionally rhymes. As in you go, you're doing that brilliant story now with some banging tunes in it.
Did you see it with Glenn Close? Norma Desmond?
I think I saw it with Patti LuPone.
Oh, wow. Jesus.
Yeah, pretty great. It's great.
Oh my
God. And it has a car chase on stage, which I've always said, that's what theatre's missing. Car chases on stage.
Well, we have to... I mean, he's gotten enough awards, but Andrew Lloyd Webber is going, what can we put on stage this time? Let's get the water on stage. He goes, we've got to get this water on stage. He's not settling for less, honey. He is getting this water on stage. Like, it's amazing. And the car, I had no idea about the car, but it's like that. Oh my God. Oh my God. When William Holden goes, not having my car in Los Angeles is like not having my legs. Yeah. Like, it's like nothing. That was written in 1949. It's like, we could never. It's like,
It also does how it is like remarkably...
The same.
Yeah, you yes, go. It's the same. The Hollywood is the same.
100%, except for one thing, and I will give this to Civilization. William Holden calls Norma Desmond out for being... an actress at the age of 50. She's supposed to be 50 years old. But there is this implication, especially in the bridge scene in Sunset Boulevard, where Buster Keaton is in, like in one of his, oh my God, it's like so devastating. Buster Keaton is literally in the shot where William Holden, it's like a pan around this bridge table and it's William Holden's genius voiceover. It's like, and that theme is really good of that movie too. there, it's so creepy. The music is so creepy in that movie. They pan around the bridge table and then William Holden goes like, and every Friday she would invite her waxworks over. Mm. And it was this implication of these like old aging actors. But they're all supposed to be in their 50s. It's like, honey, no. times have changed, I guess. Yeah. A little bit, you know. They have.
Well, yeah, they have. But also we live longer now. People used to die at 50. Back then.
I know. And they looked so, I mean, that's the other thing is like everyone's looking as young as a bug these days.
Exactly.
Yeah.
What a great film. What is the worst film you've ever seen?
Oh, yeah. This is a great answer too. Because I thank God for Letterboxd. Oh my God. Shout out for Letterboxd. I would never have a single answer for this if it was not for that application. I wrote By the Sea. Have you seen this movie?
I have seen By the Sea. I have seen all 2 hours and 40 minutes of By the Sea.
I have too. And it's the worst film I've ever seen. But I love it. I mean, it's a great...
I loved it.
And I love how, again, back to all actors are reincarnated soldiers theme.
Yeah.
I love that actors get really obsessed with like, how can we make a movie? I myself guilty of this. How can we make a movie that's about sort of sex getting a little perverted? it's like that's the hot idea from an actor. It's like, how can we make it a little sexy in a crazy sort of French way? Or you know what I mean? Or like, how can we incorporate some poison? Or like, how can we incorporate some naughty? It's like so, so written by actors. It's basically the only document written by actors. It's the most actor thing I've ever seen in my entire life. It's crazy. And they, you know what I mean? Like, it's like everybody wants to be in like Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf. Like everybody wants to be in that play. So it's like, and every actor is like, I've always wanted to play George, or like, I've always wanted to play Martha. Yes. And so it's like, actually, honey, we can do that if we write this script about a French hotel and we get to get drunk and yell at each other. It's like, it's the need.
Right.
It's the compulsive 21st century actor's need to do Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf.
That's which so I love. Funny.
It's true.
Great take.
It's true. We're all desperate for it.
We all want to do. I do want to do Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf. Of course. That's all anyone wants to do.
Yeah, exactly. That's what everyone wants to do. It's the best one.
It's
the best one. So
it's the only good play.
Probably. It's actually the only good play. And if we just sit, maybe I do like Arcadia a lot. But besides that, that's me being decorative, me saying Arcadia.
Let's be real.
That is such bullshit.
All plays are boring except for Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf.
And we are lying to ourselves every goddamn day, being like, look at all these plays. Yeah, like, it's like, ridiculous. Oh, we could do a play. It's like, that's a lie. The human race wants to do one play.
Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf? 100% the most true thing you've said today.
Thank you.
That's the only play.
It's the only play.
Oh, should we do a Doll's House again? No.
No.
Stop kidding yourself.
Like, yeah, or it's like we're doing a Doll's House and it's like the person. It's like, how can we make a Doll's House be Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf? It's like everything. It's like, if you see it through these lenses now, it's like most contemporary art is like, how can we make it Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf?
Amazing. Yeah. You changed my life. Yeah. Again, Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf?
Again.
What is the funniest film you've ever seen? What makes you laugh? What film made you laugh the most?
Okay. This is also, I'm sure people have said this one too. And again, it's so on brand too, but I can't help being myself. Is Waiting for Guffman is the funniest film to me of all time.
Great.
Obviously. Obviously. Mm-hmm. Very similar idea.
Yeah, it's a group of people trying to make Independence Day in New York.
Yeah, exactly. Very similar idea.
Maureen, what's this I hear about you going to film school? I am.
I want to gain valuable skills while making films and developing my creativity. So I'm attending the New York Film Academy. I'm thinking about becoming one of them people that writes the numbers on the title board. NYFA is a very respected film school. I hear they offer a variety of options to meet your educational goals, whether you want a BFA or MFA degree, or want to learn at a quicker pace with a short-term program. That's right! They've got workshops and summer camps in filmmaking, acting, cinematography, screenwriting, producing, game design, musical theatre, and more. Are you attending in New York? Might do. They have multiple campuses in some amazing locations like New York, LA, Miami, Italy, Australia, and online. And you can learn more about the New York Film Academy at nyfa.edu. That's nyfa.edu.
Thanks, Maureen. Hello, my neighbour Maureen. What's this I hear about you getting a promotion at the office? Didn't you just get promoted last month?
It's all thanks to Canva. I've been nailing every meeting with AI-powered Canva presentations.
Isn't that Canva's AI slide generator where you just describe your presentation in a few words and Canva presentations will generate captivating slides in seconds?
That's right. And to top it off, I use Magic Write, Canva's AI text generator, to perfect my points.
Sounds brilliant, Maureen. No more copying and pasting from other programs. No more app switching.
Can Canva Docs with Magic Write generate any text you want for work?
Yes.
Sales proposals, marketing plans?
Yeah.
Meeting agendas, ratings of all 12 Muppet movies using the extensive point system that I developed at age 12?
Anyone can save time with Canva's AI-powered tools. Generate your draft fast with Canva Docs at canva.com, designed for work.
Oh, thanks, my neighbour Maureen. Yeah, thank you.
With every CBD product claiming to do something different, it's nearly impossible to decide what's best for you. Lazarus Naturals pioneered the farm-to-front-door model of transparency where they handle each step of the production process to ensure quality, potency, and consistency. Scannable labels allow you to see the test results of your hemp batch so you can be confident in the safety and quality. Visit LazarusNaturals.com today. Lazarus Naturals, committed to improving your life as well as the world around you. Not available in Idaho, Iowa, or South Dakota.
Ruby McCollister, you have been wonderful. You have, yeah. You have taken us on a journey across time and to the other side. However, when you what some would call too chill, you were so chill that you were sat down, you were just being chill, and you were so fucking chill that your heart went, I'll just stop beating, shall I? We're just chill. 100%. And you went, yeah, we're just chill, baby. We're chill. 100%. And the heart stopped. And then your organs stopped working. And then suddenly, in the way that you dreamed of, not quite because it was a bit quicker, but you realized, oh, I'm dying slowly, but in a like hot way.
Ooh, yeah,
You quickly pulled everyone. You said, I love you, blah, 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 blah. I'm walking through Hollywood with a coffin. You know what I'm like? And I go, I'll just pop in, check in on Ruby. And I'm like,
Oh no.
I knew she was chilling, but she's chilled too hard.
Yeah.
She's done it again. She's chilled too hard. Mm. And I come in, you're dead. And I have to chop you up because I've misjudged.
You've
your
to chop me up.
I have to chop you up to fit you into the coffin. So I chop you up.
Oh, God.
Put all the bits of you in there. Stuff you in.
No.
And I'm having to smash you in there anyway.
No.
It's rammed in there. There's only enough room in this coffin for me to slip one DVD into the side for you to take across to the other side. And when you get there, it's movie night every night. What film are you taking to show The Musicians of Heaven when it's your movie night? Ruby McCollister III.
All About Eve.
Great twist. Perfectly on brand. You've done it.
I did it.
Is there anything you would like to tell people to watch? I believe that this, sadly, is not coming out in time for the Edinburgh Festival. So
it's totally
why
fine.
Don't you promote
here we are.
The tour of your show, which you will be doing, I'm sure, around the world.
Yes, my show is called Tragedy, and it's about basically my fixation on all of these macabre themes of failure and death, because I was raised in the hellmouth that we call Los Angeles. And that's what it's about. And you laugh, you cry, I sing, I entertain you.
Sounds fucking great.
It's on brand. That's what it is. It's on brand.
Ruby, you've been a pleasure. Thank you for
your time. Thank you. This has been so fun.
Good luck in Edinburgh.
Thank you, Brett.
And have a wonderful death.
Okay. Goodbye. Thank you. Goodbye.
So that was episode 266. Head over to the Patreon at patreon.com/Brett Goldstein for the extra secrets and video with Ruby. Go to Apple Podcasts, give us a 5-star rating, but write about the film that means the most to you and why. My neighbour Maureen loves reading it, always makes a grind. It's very much appreciated. Thank you all for listening. Thank you to Ruby for doing the show. Thank you to Scroobius Pip and the Distraction Pieces Network. Thanks to Buddy Peace for producing it. Thanks to iHeartMedia and Will Ferrell, Big Money Players Network, for hosting it. Thanks to Adam Richardson for the graphics and Lisa Lydon for the photography. Come and join me next week for an absolutely smashing guest. In the meantime, that's it for now. Have a lovely week. And please, now more than ever, be excellent to each other.
Sometimes I dream of becoming an actor. Have you ever dreamt of becoming an actor? Maureen, what is it you think I do for a living? Never mind, sounds like you need the New York Film Academy. NYFA offers workshops, BFA and MFA degrees and summer camps in filmmaking, acting, journalism and more, online and on campuses across the globe. To make films alongside industry professionals, explore more at nyfa.edu.
Thanks, Brett.
Thank you, Maureen.
Maureen, your Canva presentation looks brilliant.
Thanks, Brett. That's because I used AI-powered Canva presentations. I just described what I wanted, and Canva presentations generated the perfect slides. You can even make a talking presentation for people to watch on their own time. Check this out. Recording. 101 Reasons Why Beaches is the Saddest Film Ever Made by your neighbour Maureen. Is it easy to use? If you can use a computer, you can nail your next work presentation with Canva Presentations at canva.com. Designed for work.
Oh, thanks, my name is Maureen. Yeah, thank you.
With every CBD product claiming to do something different, it's nearly impossible to decide what's best for you. Lazarus Naturals pioneered the farm-to-front-door model of transparency where they handle each step of the production process to ensure quality, potency, and consistency. Scannable labels allow you to see the test results of your hemp batch so you can be confident in the safety and quality. Visit LazarusNaturals.com today. Lazarus Naturals, committed to improving your life as well as the world around you. Not available in Idaho, Iowa, or South Dakota.